Like many of you, I really enjoy going to the mountains. But one thing that we've all noticed is that there are certain species of trees that are never seen on mountaintops or ridges. And while this is true for several reasons, an important reason is that the trees must be able to withstand extremely high winds at this altitude. All trees have a limit, but only the strong will survive at a really high elevation. This principle is well known, and it's a common illustration. You remember back from probably about the 1980s that Tanya Tucker had a song entitled Strong Enough to Bend. It starts off, there's a tree out in the backyard that's never been broken by the wind, and the reason it's still standing is it was strong enough to bend. She goes on to describe the problems of marriage and a relationship, and implied going further would even be with family. But you know, the reality is that if we're going to survive as a Christian, strength and flexibility are essential to us as well. A shallow faith is easily uprooted, and a brittle faith is easily broken. But the strange thing is that just like the tree, the things that create the greatest challenges for us can also be a catalyst for greater strength. So let's look at the storms of life and the people of God, great people of faith who were bent but not broken. We're going to look at three things this morning. Number one, we're going to observe the winds of personal rejection. In 1 Kings chapter 18, we read of Elijah and how he had gone to the mountaintop to face the 400 prophets of Baal, and how that he had been successful and Baal had been humiliated, his servants had been humiliated, and how that God had vindicated Elijah. Elijah enjoyed a great victory, and then rain came after a long series of drought. But when word got back to Jezebel, who those prophets of Baal had served, she said that Elijah would face the same fate as those prophets which had served under her. In 1 Kings 19, verses 1 through 4, notice what the text says. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die, and said, It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my father's. Here was a man that had experienced a tremendous victory and vindication before the eyes of the people. He had told them before the challenge to the prophets of Baal, for them to choose who they were going to serve, that if the Lord be God, serve him. If Baal be God, serve him. And the people answered not a word. After the great miracle, all the people began to speak out. All of the people began to declare their allegiance to the Lord. But then Elijah is threatened by the queen, and he runs. He is bent by the winds of personal rejection. What about Moses? In Exodus 2, verses 11 through 15, we read that it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to them that did the wrong, Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, Surely this thing is known. He thought he had seen everyone, or he thought that he had seen that no one was there, but he missed someone. Someone saw what he had done, and he was standing up for his own people, but his own people turned against him. The winds of personal rejection. But that was not all with poor Moses. In Exodus 16, verse 2, the Bible says that the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. In other words, even though the Egyptians were oppressing us, and even though they were beating us, and they were causing us to work even harder, even though we were the slaves involved in that slave labor, we would have rather died there because we had our bellies full and we had something to eat. People still do the same thing. What about Mary and Martha and the complaint about one who would serve and the other who sat at the feet of Jesus? What about Jesus to those who tried to follow him and followed him across the Sea of Galilee one day? And Jesus told them, "You're not following me because of the message that I'm teaching. You're following me because I fed you." Paraphrasing there, of course. The same was true with those people. What about Esau? Esau and Jacob. Esau was willing to sell his birthright. He had walked back, come back to the house after hunting unsuccessfully. And he said, "Why shouldn't I sell my porridge? I'm rather my birthright for this bowl of porridge, for I'm about to die." Was he really about to die, or was he just famished? Was he just extremely hungry? We have people today that can't wait for Bible class to be over and won't come to services or stay for all the services because they've got to be the first one at the restaurant or because they're hungry. Well, you know what the solution is. Eat a bigger breakfast before you leave home. Are we doing the same thing that the children of Israel did today when we put physical food before the spiritual food? Remember when Jesus' disciples came back as Jesus was talking with the Samaritan woman? And they had gone into town to buy food. Jesus told them, "I have bread that you know not of." They began to wonder among themselves, well, has someone else gone to get food, or has Jesus found food somewhere else? But Jesus was talking about the food which was the teaching of the gospel to a person who needed the salvation of her soul. Jesus knew that teaching the gospel, listening to the gospel, meditating upon the gospel, all of these things are way more important than what we put in our mouths, having a full mouth and a full belly. But the children of Israel didn't feel that way. They said, "We'd rather had good food to eat. We don't care that the Lord delivered us." What ingratitude. In Exodus 17, verse 2, "Wherefore the people did chide Moses and said, 'Give us water that we may drink.' And Moses said unto them, 'Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do you tempt the Lord?' And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, 'Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us out of the land of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?' And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, 'What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me.'" How did Moses put up with this? 40 years he dealt with these people as they wandered through the wilderness, murmuring and complaining repeatedly. And yet when he had gone up on the mount to receive the Ten Commandments, and the people had encouraged Aaron to build that golden calf, Moses came down. The Lord told Moses to let him alone so that his wrath would wax hot and he would destroy that people. And Moses begged for those people. Look at Exodus 32 and verse 32. And Moses begged and pleaded and said he was willing to give up his soul in eternity to save that nation. How could a man who had experienced such personal rejection, how could he possibly put up with what the children of Israel did to him? It was because of his faith. His faith didn't break because it was strong enough to bend. What about David? In 2 Samuel 15 and verse 12, we read of what happened when David's son Absalom sought to take away the kingdom. Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Galonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, and he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. And there came a messenger to David, saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, for we shall not escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword." And the king's servant said unto the king, Behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. And the king went forth, and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women which were concubines to keep the house. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and they tarried in a place that was afar off. David, a man who is later going to be called the man after a man after God's own heart. David, a man to whom great promises were made by God. Elijah, Moses, and David, all three of these people rejected by the very people that they were sent to deliver, the very people they were sent to serve, the very people they were sent to bless, rejected of them. But they didn't give up. They didn't quit. They bent, but they didn't break. Number two, we want to notice the winds of personal ruin. The winds of personal ruin. And I believe that anybody, when thinking of this, would think of the same person, and that is the person Job. So notice from Job chapter 1, and we'll read there in just one moment. In Job chapter 1, we read that in verse 3 that he was the greatest man of all the East. In other words, he was the richest man of all the East. And it is revealed to us what he possessed. In verse 3, 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and a very great household. Here was a rich man. But then look down. After Satan has come to the Lord and has told the Lord that the only reason Job served him was because he had been blessed of the Lord. He says in verse 11, "But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." The Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power, only upon himself shall not put forth not thy hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking in their eldest brother's house, and there came a messenger unto Job and said, "The oxen were plowing, and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came another also and said, "The fire of God has fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came another also and said, "The Chaldeans made out 3 bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the 4 corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." I'm going to tell you something. You can't experience much more personal ruin than that. All of his income potential, all of his possessions, all destroyed in one moment. And even his children died. All of this happening to him on the same day. If there was anything that would ever break or destroy a person, what happened to Job would have to be at the top of the list. But listen to how he responded. And he said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And then his wife comes to him and says, "Why don't you just curse God and die? You're pathetic. You're suffering." Job said, "No, that's a foolish thing. That's what a foolish woman would say." And then his 3 friends come to him. And to add insult to injury, they accuse Job of being a wicked man, because in their minds, this type of calamity would only come to a man who is a wicked sinner. Job goes on to argue with them and to establish his cause. And the more he thinks about it, and the more he argues with them, the more convinced he becomes he had not done anything wrong that would precipitate the tragedy that had come upon him and upon his wife. Job cries out to God. He says, at one point, "I know that one day my Redeemer shall stand upon the earth." Job is searching. Job is hurting. Job is bending, and he is bending badly, but he hasn't broken yet. Finally, the Lord comes to him and asks him, "Job, where were you when I laid the balances of the earth? Where were you when I did all of these things? Do you understand the treasures of the snow? Do you know everything, Job?" Job finally is humbled because he realizes that the Lord sees the big picture where he did not. And in the end, God blessed him with more than he had ever even, than he had had before. So the winds of personal ruin, Job knew what it was all about. Genesis 19, verses 23 through 30, and our time will not let us read all of this morning, but notice there that Lot experienced personal ruin as well. You think about Lot having to leave Sodom and Gomorrah when God had pronounced that it was going to be destroyed. He had to leave suddenly. He took his wife and he took his daughters. And you have to realize he left everything that he owned behind, or basically. And what did the Lord told him? The Lord had told them not to look back. So as they're going along, his wife looks back. She became a pillar of salt. And so it's Lot and his two daughters. Lot had gone from a man who was sitting at the gate of the city, which implies a position of importance, to being a man living in a cave. And you know what happened as his life spiraled downward from that point. What about Naomi? Look at Ruth. In Ruth 1, we begin reading at verse 1. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Ephratites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. What a terrible thing to happen to her. She is in another country, trying to find food, trying to find a way to survive. And she's now a widow. What about her two sons? They took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other was Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion, they died also, both of them. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husbands. Then she arose with her daughter-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. We know that one of the daughters remained, but one of them, Ruth, went with Naomi. Here was a woman that had lost not only her husband, but both of her two sons. And she was too old to have sons, to have more children, or to have grandchildren. Talk about personal ruin. Everything, it seemed, had gone wrong with Naomi. As we read the rest of the book of Ruth, we find that that is not actually true, that she was blessed in her old age, primarily because of Ruth and Ruth's devotion to her. But Naomi didn't give up. As things began to unfold in her life and opportunities for improvement came, Naomi continued to trust in God, and her life was blessed greatly because of it. So we have the winds of personal rejection, the winds of personal ruin, but what about the winds of personal suffering? Well, in Job, we go back to Job and we find that he had boils that were all over his body. He scratched them with a potsherd sitting in a pile of ashes. It added insult to injury. What about Jeremiah? In Jeremiah chapter 38, verses 1 through 6, we read about what happened to him. I'm going to drop down to verse 2. Jeremiah had spoken to the people, saying, Thus saith the Lord, He that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live. For he shall have his life for a prey, and shall live. Thus saith the Lord, This city shall surely be given to the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall take it. That was Nebuzaradan, the captain of Nebuchadnezzar's army. And he was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and the carrying away of the rest of the people of the southern two tribes. Verse 4. Therefore the princess said unto the king, We beseech thee, let this man be put to death, for thus he weakeneth the hands of the men of war that remain in this city, and the hands of all the people, in speaking such words unto them. For this man seeketh not the welfare of this people, but the hurt. Then Zedekiah the king said, Behold, he is in your hand. for the king is not he that can do anything against you. Then they took Jeremiah, cast him into the dungeon of Malchiah, the son of Hamelech, that was in the court of the prison, and they let down Jeremiah with cords, and in the dungeon there was no water but mire, so Jeremiah sunk in the mire. And if he had been left there, he would have died, and that was the point. They wanted him to die, but they wanted him to suffer personal suffering. If it had not been for Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, Jeremiah would have died there. What about Lazarus? Not the one that Jesus raised from the dead, the friend of Jesus, the brother of Mary and Martha, but the Lazarus about whom we read in Luke 16, verses 20 through 21. Here was a man that was laid at the rich man's gate, at a rich man's gate. Every day the dogs came and licked his sores. You know, a person may be sick, but when a person's sick, we take them to the hospital, or we take them to rehab. We take them somewhere where they can receive medical care, but we don't just dump them by the side of the road so the dogs can come and lick his sores. That's where this man was. We find after they died that the angels took him to Abraham's bosom. So we know that he was a righteous man. Here was a righteous man that did not deserve, we would say, probably to suffer. And yet he did. He experienced great suffering. What about the Apostle Paul? In 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28, Paul asked about the false teachers, those who challenged him. He said, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. In other words, he received 39 stripes. They counted to 39, and they did not give any more lest they had miscounted and broke the law by giving more than 40. He continued then, thrice was I beaten with rods, once I was stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, beside those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. Paul said, I'm suffering inside and out. Look at all the ways that I have been mistreated. If there was anybody that would ever been to the point of breaking, it would seem that it would be somebody like Job or Jeremiah or Lazarus or Paul. And yet none of them did. They all remained faithful. Flexible trees sway and bend in the storm without breaking. In fact, there's actually a benefit for the root system of this type of tree as it struggles against the wind, because by moving slightly, the roots loosen the soil, which allow the roots to grow and become even stronger. And flexible people sway and bend in the storms of life without breaking, because overcoming difficulty often makes us stronger. Another song recently, I think Kelly Clarkson was the one who performed it, but there's a statement in the song, and we've heard the statement before that song, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. We laugh about it, but in many ways there's a lot of truth to this. Trees have no natural will or determination to withstand these winds, but people do. And strength for Christians comes from their faith. In Hebrews 11, we have what is often called the Hebrews Hall, the Hall of Fame of the Faithful, or Faith's Hall of Fame. And we have examples of people that have overcome great trials and great problems. And then in Hebrews 12, 1, as we read a few moments ago, wherefore seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, these people that have endured, these people that have been bent by the storms and the winds of life, but who have overcome. He says, we have all of these people as witnesses that are watching us. Well, what is the conclusion? Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. ye have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Strength for Christians comes from their faith. We might be hit hard by storms of personal rejection or financial ruin or personal suffering, but we will overcome if we are strong enough to bend. And there is no better example of this than the author and finisher of our faith. And so the Hebrews writer is telling us, when we look at Jesus, we realize we can overcome. Jesus experienced personal rejection. John 6, 66 through 69, we find that a great crowd of followers left him. In Matthew 26 and verse 31, Jesus talks about his disciples and how that they're going to fulfill an Old Testament prophecy and they're going to be scattered as sheep. And we know that they were. And then just read about the crucifixion. The personal ruin or want, Jesus said, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head, Matthew 8:20. His personal suffering in the Garden of Gethsemane, Matthew 26, verses 39 and 42, reveal the internal, the emotional suffering he was going through, and then just read the details of the crucifixion. There is indeed great encouragement to be found in his strength and his victory, and in the strength and the victory of others. Hebrews 4 and verse 15, we are reminded that we have hope and we can find peace in knowing that Jesus has been tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin, and that he cares. So let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Because not one of us, no matter how many storms of life we have faced, not one of us have been executed. Not one of us have died. Not one of us has shed blood for our faith like Jesus did. And if he can overcome, we can overcome through him. So let's run that race. Have you started that race this morning? Do you really believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? And if you do, have you listened to Jesus' teaching about repentance and that we must not judge our lives by the lives of others, but that we must repent as well, Luke 13, 3 and 5, and that we must not be ashamed, but willing to confess him before others, Matthew 10, 32 and 33. Have you been baptized into Christ as Jesus told his apostles to instruct people to do, Matthew 28, 18 through 20, Mark 16 and verse 16, since it does wash away our sins, Acts 22 and verse 16. If you've done that, but if the winds of life have gotten you down, if you've struggled, if you've gone back into sin, God will forgive if we will repent and confess those sins. 1 John 1 and verse 9, and the Bible tells us to pray for one another as we confess our faults one to another, James 5 and verse 16. Now the winds and the storms of life may be blowing hard, and we may have to bend, and we may have to bend a long way, but if our faith is strong, if the roots of our faith run deep, the storms of this life can never break us. If we can help, would you come as we stand and as we sing?